If price is truth, then a market capitalization of over $1 billion for over 100 different cryptocurrencies tells a story. We live in a multi-coin world. But does that mean that Bitcoin has competitors on its path to world reserve currency? No. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we've got a great piece just dropped like a day or two ago. Oh, no, the 24th. Okay, it's like 5 days old. But by Nick Bhatia, and it is called Bitcoin and Crypto Aren't the Same, which kind of speaks for itself. But he's got a really great, just a great kind of simplified breakdown and a couple of really good ways to think about this. And this just kind of got me, I'm always thinking about shitcoins and Bitcoin and how these things compare and how to make sense of crypto. I mean, that's kind of why my guilty pleasure is the Shitcoin Insider Show. So really fun guy's take with this one. Always great writing from Nick Bhatia. He kills it all the time. Got a lot of his past work in the Bitcoin Audible library. I have a couple of my favorites, like the Lightning Network reference rate and a link to Layered Money in the show notes. Real quick, I just want to thank all of our sponsors. We've got the Fold Card, premium Fold Card for Sats Back on everything. We got Bitcoin 2022, the Bitcoin Conference. It is absolutely going to be nuts. We're taking over Miami. You're going to want to come hang out. Then we got Swan Bitcoin for stacking sats. If you're looking for a place to buy Bitcoin, just go to Swan. Yes, it's that simple. And keep it all safe. You want a hardware wallet. The BitBox O2 hardware wallet. It's easy to use, easy to set up, and secure. And that's what you need. That's it. That's the package. Big shout out to them for keeping this show alive so that I can do the Bitcoin thing full time. I love this space. I love learning about this shit. And I love me a Nick Bhatia article. So let's go ahead and get into it with today's read. And it is titled, Bitcoin and Crypto Aren't the Same, by Nick Bhatia. Please, please stop asking me which crypto to buy next. It can be baffling at times. I relinquished a career in fixed income trading and interest rate strategy, wrote a best-selling book about Bitcoin, and even committed to an intermediate Bitcoin price target of $500,000. But still, I get the same question everywhere I go. What other cryptos should I buy? Let me be very clear in my response. Bitcoin and crypto are not the same thing. Asset class differentiation. In my 5 years studying Bitcoin, I have come across several types of advocates. One is the Bitcoin-only zealot. This type of person believes that Bitcoin is the only currency that will exist in the future. He or she thinks that all fiat currencies and altcoins will eventually succumb to Bitcoin. On the opposite end of the spectrum, there is the multi-coiner. This type of individual is convinced that Bitcoin won't be the end-all be-all, that other cryptocurrencies will take a large slice of the pie, and that Bitcoin might become the MySpace of the crypto world. Instead of dissecting the theses of Bitcoin maximalists and multi-coiners, I'll present my holistic vision of the future. Some of it can be found in Layered Money, but there's plenty more to add. Where do Ethereum, altcoins, shitcoins, NFTs, and DeFi fit in? I strongly believe they will all coexist, and that these new asset classes are not going anywhere. Price is truth. In the 13 years since the Bitcoin white paper was published by Satoshi Nakamoto, thousands of cryptocurrencies have been launched. While none of them have eclipsed the total market value of Bitcoin, many have achieved impressive market values. I'm not the type to take food off other people's tables, and I certainly won't start with Bitcoin copycats. If price is truth, then a market capitalization of over $1 billion for over 100 different cryptocurrencies tells a story. We live in a multi-coin world. But does that mean that Bitcoin has competitors on its path to world reserve currency? No. Bitcoin is a numerical commodity. It has no CEO, no headquarters, and no formal body that controls it. It is truly decentralized. This has earned it status as a, quote, virtual commodity in the eyes of the CFTC, the futures regulator in the United States. Additionally, the securities regulator, the SEC, has been adamant that Bitcoin is not a security. Can this be said for the rest of crypto? Ethereum. If you spend a few minutes scrolling through my Twitter timeline, you'll find endless animosity towards Ethereum. I have no such animosity. I see an asset worth $500 billion that failed to pass my own due diligence. In full disclosure, my quote crypto portfolio is 100% Bitcoin. I have never owned Ethereum, nor do I intend to. The reason is quite black and white. In 2016, when I was falling down the Bitcoin rabbit hole and voraciously consuming every podcast episode, online forum, or rare book that I could to understand it, I learned about a new up-and-coming crypto called Ethereum. It had hype and excitement surrounding it, but within weeks of me learning about it, this happened. From the Wall Street Journal. The new digital currency Ethereum is only about 3 years old, but after a controversial software upgrade, it has already split in two. The original Ethereum underwent a hack, resulting in a loss of $60 million, and the leaders of the project essentially attempted to undo the hack by rolling back Ethereum's blockchain to before the incident. As a freshly minted Bitcoiner, I immediately knew this other cryptocurrency wasn't for me. Bitcoin's lack of center and authority attracted me. I looked across at Ethereum and saw a coin with leaders that possessed the power to change its supply. There was no way a currency that had a center could become a neutral, base layer asset upon which to build a monetary system. While writing Layered Money, I concluded that gold was the monetary precedent that Bitcoin was trying to chase down, and that neutrality was the only requirement. Despite Ethereum having materially influential central points of control, it obviously attracts the demand of market participants. In fact, its network effect has become strong enough that the CME launched Ethereum futures contracts in 2021. Approximately 4 years after it launched Bitcoin futures, and the CME doesn't play around. My point about Ethereum is that I don't view it as a neutral commodity. It resembles some of Bitcoin's commodity-like features while exhibiting a security-like management structure, with committees, an influential and public founder, and constant directives about a transition from proof-of-work mining-based supply origination to proof-of-stake, a system that somewhat mimics a shareholder structure. Nevertheless, $500 billion later, segments of the market love Ethereum. This brings me to an analogy that I most frequently use when describing the difference between Bitcoin and crypto. Bitcoin is like gold, while the rest of crypto is like the technology startup world. These two asset classes are separate and distinct. One does not prohibit the other. The two can coexist. But I've never been a stock picker, and it's not in my wheelhouse to identify and invest in startups that I believe will have an outsized impact on the technology world. Altcoins. Continuing with the startup analogy, I spoke with a trusted former colleague earlier this year to catch up and talk Bitcoin. he innocently suggested I look into a new crypto called Solana and assured me that Solana was going to claw away some of Ethereum's demand due to its technological advances. My goodness, was he right. Year-to-date performance of Solana is mind-blowing. The coin is up over 11,000% in 2021. This is compared to an approximate 500% return in Ethereum and a lowly 100% in Bitcoin. Sure, I could have made outsized returns by being in either Solana or Ethereum versus Bitcoin. But again, picking startups is outside of my skill set. I mentioned that my friend is somebody I trust, but trust alone was not enough to get me to part ways with my Bitcoin for another crypto. I'm focused on the long-term implications from a new global neutral asset and the monetary hierarchy anchored by it, not how one crypto's smart contracts are more functional than another's. Then last week, I saw this headline. Solana Labs CEO: it doesn't really matter if the network goes down again. Solana's CEO said what? It doesn't matter. I stopped reading at CEO. I love not having a CEO in Bitcoin that can influence my investment. I am risk averse. My 100% Bitcoin allocation might not seem risk averse to a fixed income investor, but I look at diversified crypto portfolios with utter fright. I simply don't want exposure to CEOs, foundations, and companies. Not my cup of tea. But if you are willing to do the work and have a risk appetite, who am I to stop you? Different asset class. Shitcoins. A headline from Vanity Fair. Inside the rise and fall and rise and fall of shitcoins. Anybody remember ICOs? This was the 2017 rage, only to be trounced this year by all sorts of dog meme coins. Readers, please be careful with all of this stuff. You're potentially better off studying the NFL and gambling at the Bellagio sportsbook. Once again, Bitcoin doesn't belong in the same conversation. Look at what happened yesterday, and this type of occurrence is commonplace. Tweet from Bitcoin Magazine. Someone just moved 15,076 Bitcoin, worth over $860 million, for a transaction fee of 95 cent. Try that with gold. Try that with gold? Try that with a shitcoin. $1 billion moving from one corner of the planet to another, practically free of cost, in minutes. Bitcoin is money and fulfilling its function as such. Meme coins, flavor of the month coins, and whatever the startup world comes up with next should not be compared to Bitcoin. Is it starting to make sense that we're not talking about the same thing? Please don't try to use Dogecoin to send $1 billion. Tweet from @Delta1. Binance. Have to rebuild Doge wallet entirely, which is causing a delay that company expect may last another week or so. It is far from a nation-grade technology. My friend Elise Killeen originated this term, and I continue to borrow it. Tweet from Elise Killeen. Bitcoin is a nation-grade money. Bitcoin is nation-grade financial infrastructure. And Bitcoin is singular in its form. NFTs. But what about NFTs? I get this question a lot nowadays. I really liked this summation from JP Morgan's research team on the new NFT asset class. Quote, by creating marketplaces for illiquid assets, such as digital art, collectibles, music, and gaming, the NFT universe is surely set to continue to grow strongly over the coming years because it helps to solve the problem of injecting liquidity into naturally illiquid assets. JP Morgan. I completely agree with this assessment. NFT, short for non-fungible token, is a new type of digital asset that will likely disrupt many of the corners of the collectibles world and beyond. I understand that world. I used to collect baseball cards as a kid, still have my Kobe Bryant and Allen Iverson rookie cards. Sure, sports memorabilia will likely find its way into the digital universe through NFTs. But why are we talking as if Bitcoin and sports memorabilia are even remotely the same thing? The NFT crowd also suggests that Ethereum is a promising investment because it anchors much of the NFT world. While this might be true, this would equate Ethereum to an operating system or software platform, not a neutral commodity with purely monetary properties. The NFT universe is approximately $7 billion in size. Bitcoin's market cap is above $1 trillion. That's 0.7% in relative size. Sometimes I feel like Iverson when people ask me about Bitcoin and NFTs. Quote, "We're sitting here talking about practice? Not a game. We're talking about practice?" DeFi. Another new buzzword in the digital asset complex is DeFi, or decentralized finance. Bitcoin is a decentralized financial asset, but for some reason DeFi has been used to describe many things outside of Bitcoin, ignoring the simple fact that businesses want to create new products and profit from innovation. The centralized counterparty system used in traditional finance can truly be disrupted by cryptography-based technology. From my vantage point, settling fixed income securities by fax machine as late as 2019, the legacy financial system has tremendous room for technological modernization. And this new category of DeFi might have a lot to do with it. However, knowing which software solutions will fix this or that problem with security settlement and loan origination is, again, outside of my area of expertise. I have little doubt that the DeFi movement will continue, but Bitcoin stands alone as a reserve asset in this new experimental world. One of the reasons that Ethereum is not investable to me is that its problems will lead other projects to compete. In a recent and fascinating example of DeFi, a DAO, or Decentralized Autonomous Organization, formed in order to bid on a copy of the U.S. Constitution. While the bid failed, I found this little tidbit fascinating from the article titled, quote, "By the Constitution Aftermath. Everyone very mad, confused, losing lots of money, fighting, crying, etc." Quote, "Of the initial $200 we bought in ETH, $90 was eaten up in fees simply to donate to Constitution DAO." Yikes! Bitcoin stands alone. You are welcome to do your own research. With that research, maybe you'll be able to outperform Bitcoin. But my mission is Bitcoin education, because I believe that Bitcoin is a world-changing force for good. I believe it can change the lives of billions for the better, giving the planet access to a savings vehicle isolated from centralized entities, a form of property rights to which the masses have never had access. This is also why privacy in Bitcoin is so important. Property rights are useless if oppressive governments can hunt you down and identify your Bitcoin holdings at the drop of a hat. While many are ecstatic about the new Bitcoin City announcement out of El Salvador, more exciting to me is the idea that ARK's Kathy Wood believes that 2% of the country's GDP is already denominated in Bitcoin. Are any of the altcoins we discussed on track to achieve that sort of metric? For all of these reasons, please stop asking me which crypto to buy next. My response has evolved to, sorry, I am not invested in that asset class. All right, that closes out Bitcoin and Crypto Are Not the Same Thing by Nick Bhatia. I want to do a short guy's take on this, so let's hit our sponsor really fast and we will jump back in. All right, so Bitcoin is a topic that we bring up quite a bit on this show. You would know this if you're a regular listener. It happens to be a common topic. And the biggest, most epic Bitcoin conference in the world happens once a year and is run by the incredible crew over at Bitcoin Magazine. Last year at Bitcoin 2021, they literally had a dumpster full of Venezuelan bolivars. I literally have a fat stack of bolivars that I think is worth like two or three sats, which is pretty cool. You just grab them out of the dumpster. But this year they're going to have a music festival, a sound money fest, and there's going to be some really big artists. There's so many great speakers, multiple stages with people talking about all different aspects and projects and things around Bitcoin, including yours truly. There's going to be shows, tech to explore and play around with. All the artwork is incredible. The Lightning Games. There's an open source stage this year. And just people to meet. Like, these are the Bitcoiners. They come from everywhere for this. You're really going to want to be there. Get your tickets. Do not forget, when you do, 10% off with code GUYSWAN. 10% is a chunk, so don't forget that. GUYSWAN. But you can actually stack even more using the Fold card to buy your ticket. So this is the secret to stacking extra hard, especially the holiday season here. The Fold debit card gets you sats back on everything. And this is the perfect season for discounts and sats back and stacking all of that stuff. So I have the premium debit card. You can order it right in the Fold app. But we did a lot of Christmas shopping today. My wife and I went to dinner and watched Ghostbusters. Actually, we just got back. Wonderful movie. You should check it out. But we had like a bunch of purchases for Christmas today. So we took a little bit at dinner and we just spun the wheel like for like 10 purchases or 12 purchases or something. And my wife has much better luck than I do. But we got 3% back on our dinner tonight. We walked away with $30 in sats just today. And I even got to play the AR thing for the first time, which was dope. Their metaverse thing. Not that weird, creepy Facebook one, but the Fold metaverse where you just like walk around your house and pick up sats. No joke. But you can get 20% off the premium card with code BITCOINAUDIBLE. Then use that card to snag your Bitcoin 2022 tickets with the Fold card and see how many sats back you get on your spin. Check out all of our sponsors. I got them in the show notes and on BitcoinAudible.com. Tis the season for more sats. All right. So Nick Bhatia, by the way, if you have not read and or listened to Layered Money, which is his book, really getting into, it's really kind of a unique perspective in trying to, or I guess framework to explain what Bitcoin is in like a historical context. Like, rather than just trying to explain all the pieces, it's kind of like told in this story of how did a layered system develop in money throughout all of history, and what enabled those layers to actually interact, and what enabled those enabled them to collapse down on each other. Like, where was the real money, and what was each layer's job essentially in the monetary system that developed? Really, kind of starting back in the 1600s. Then walking through that history as we get to today, and then looking at where Bitcoin fits in that structure. And it's a really good framework. It will also actually, it would actually enlighten a little bit about this article about Bhatia's perspective on this. But not like it's necessary. I mean, the article kind of speaks for itself. But he is actually more, Nick here is, I guess, more forgiving of shitcoins and altcoins in this piece even than I am, like calling it a tech asset class. And there is an element of, I have been, the fact that altcoins and shitcoins have stuck around for so long, it has me wanting to find a thesis that I believe that makes them survive in the long term. Like I have to look at the world as it is, and I have to wonder, how did we get to this point? What is the thesis that makes sense to me as to the fact that we do live in a multi-coin world right now? You know, Nick Bhatia heads off this piece with that, is price is truth. And this is something that, like, particularly when you get into Austrian economics, like, this is absolutely true. There is something You need to be paying attention to something if the price is telling you to pay attention to it. And as he points out, there is a market capitalization of over $1 billion for 100 different cryptocurrencies, which he says tells a story. We live in a multi-coin world right now. I added the right now because I still cannot. The thesis that seems the strongest to me is that we are in the greatest debt bubble in all of history. And capital right now in these markets is still incredibly cheap. And the discretion about how and where to spend it has fallen to an all-time low. I mean, look at the environment we are in. Look around at some of the things that are happening. Like, not only do we have over 100 different cryptocurrencies with $1 billion, with over $1 billion in valuation, but we also have like hundreds and hundreds of companies that have over $1 billion valuation in the stock market that don't really even make profit and that continue to go up, not because of earnings reports or profit to earnings ratios or any like good statistics, but just because they go up, just because of the amount, the unbelievable inflow of capital. This is actually something we dug into in, what was it? Revenge of the Nodes by Aaron Siegel, Ludemagister. I'm trying to remember to link to his stuff. I can't remember the reference for his username. But in that piece in Revenge of the Nodes, which we read on the show, a really, really great piece. And he shows the progression of the capital markets and the financial markets and just how many people, how essentially the entire economy is becoming an investor class. Like everybody in the millennial generation and even younger now, we're all becoming attached to the stock market. And the inflows in the last couple of years have been greater than almost anything on record. At least I think he goes back like 20 or 30 years, just showing like the general trend of like how much money coming in or out of the capital markets. And it's just the last few years look ridiculous on the chart. And look at what comes out of that environment. Not only do we have all of these unicorn companies that damn near don't do anything, like, they're not productive enterprises, but they continue to just grow in value more and more and more. And their whole job is to just grow as fast as possible, even though they literally don't even know how to make a profit. Not only does that happen, but then you get these crazy like cultural price swings, this where the valuation of these things are just kind of a game. It's just almost a joke. Look at GameStop, AMC. You know, people could argue that this is a quote-unquote democratization of the investment class. But I do not think that's what this is. I think this is the fallout of the complete loss of discretion, like the complete disconnect between reality, between boots on the ground, between the machines, between the things that actually we value and the things that actually help people and build things for life and to make things better, and the financial markets. It's just a complete disconnect between the price of money and real things. And so there's just this giant game of throwing around hundreds of billions of dollars. And like I said, you could try to explain that or blame this on, oh, well, Reddit did this. Reddit is the cause of this. No, the Reddit conversation and a whole bunch of gorillas, what do they call themselves? Autistic gorillas or something like that? I can't remember the meme. But that entire group is the result of the debt bubble, of the complete misallocation of so much money and the ability to just leverage and chase where all the money is coming in. It's just that as we're getting to the end of this cycle, as we're getting to the end of this debt bubble, the money is flooding in so fast before the prices skyrocket. We're in this kind of like apex where the money is just faster and in greater volumes than it's ever been. And it still hasn't reached the real world because we're all playing investment games. We're all just trading points and throwing them each other and making more points and adding points over here. And crypto just feels like an extension of that. Crypto just feels like that, except it completely admitting that this isn't about equity, that this isn't about real securities, this isn't about producing things in the real world, it's just about tokens. It's just about tokens and numbers. And Nick Bhatia is right in an Austrian sense, in the idea of the economic system. Price is truth when the pricing mechanism isn't a piece of shit. But we now live in a market where the dollar is meaningless. It is the shitcoin of shitcoins, and it is how we are measuring all of these other tokens and these environments and these ecosystems and the price, the value of all of these assets. And that makes more sense to me than a world where the employees of a casino get paid in casino chips, and where the people who are working for the casino and the casino has to hire people to work on their computers and run their servers and all this stuff, that they pay their server operators in casino chips. And rather than them wanting to use, the people running the servers wanting to use money, they want to hold a liability of the casino. And I don't think that doesn't make that, it just feels like something that is a built-in friction that is just blowing up right now because of the amount of speculative capital that is just everywhere. And maybe there's interesting technology, without a doubt. But that's, Nick Bhatia gets into this, that it's like the tech startup field. And Alan Farrington and Big Al, actually, in Only the Strong Survive, it's long, but it is so good. And it's really dense, too. I've had a number of people say they had to like pause and listen to another section because they really get into it. But Big Al and Alan Farrington in Only the Strong Survive is such a great example of explaining why these things aren't equity. And they have the best analogy, in my opinion, that crypto is what finance is an attempt to create a cryptographic and decentralized network version of finance just to make it look like finance, to mimic it, but that it has lost all the meaning of why finance is a thing. And I think really finance in general has lost that meaning. Like, I don't think our financial markets and the stock market are telling us anything useful about the economy. I do not think the pricing mechanism that we are using is worth a shit. I just don't. I think it's breaking, and we're witnessing the consequences of that occurrence. Now, as always, I leave myself room to be wrong about this. Maybe we end up using networks just like my casino example. The servers, the people running servers don't want to get paid in the best money. They want to get paid in the casino chips because they really like to use the casino, and they think the casino is going to have a great season. There's going to be a lot of people wanting to hold the casino's liabilities. But I don't even know how best to describe why. This is easy. So price is truth, right? We're taking that perspective. The number 10 altcoin or shitcoin in the world is Dogecoin. It has a $29.6 billion valuation right now. Number 12 is Shiba Inu, which has a $26.5 billion valuation. Neither one of these coins do anything or has a purpose other than the fact that they're funny. They are literally meme currencies. Now, currency, like money itself, or at least currency, I think you can actually separate those two. There are things that are a currency that are not money, and I think that's an important distinction. A square is a rectangle, but a rectangle is not a square. But in the context of currency and even money, to a degree, like these things are social phenomena, and as social beings, people can be pretty retarded. We like and do and buy and have and trade lots of stupid, ridiculous stuff. Things that just don't make a lot of sense. Maybe that's what that is. Maybe there's $30 billion of just ha 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 money, and Dogecoin will satisfy that. Then there's $27 billion of my joke is better than your joke, I'm a different dog, and that market is satisfied by Shiba Inu. But none of these things are competing with Bitcoin. And that is what Nick Bhatia points out at the end of that, into that section. Yes, we live in a multi-coin world, but no, that does not mean that Bitcoin has competitors on its path to world reserve currency. And this is where he differentiates the asset class. Bitcoin is trying to be money. Everything about its tech, about its cryptography, is about designing a secure monetary ledger. We are trying to replace the base monetary good of an entirely new system. That means nation-grade security. That means reliability like no other. And I completely agree in the definition or that distinction of the asset classes that Bitcoin is trying to be money. And these other things are trying to be tech startups. They're trying to be apps and networks and server space. They're trying to provide a utility that a business provides, that a service provides, and issuing their own money to bootstrap actually having the resources to do that job. But this is where I think the big disconnect is. Most of the people I talk to in crypto don't even understand what money is. They do think of these as startups, and then they look and they compare Bitcoin as a startup. They look at it like a tech company, and they're like, it's released no new features in a couple of years, and it's not got any shiny new stuff. And look at its, you know, slow, stable growth. That's not interesting. It's old tech. It needs to grow fast. It needs to grow a billion X right now. Look at what Solana did. Solana just went 11,000% in 2 months. They're looking for the next shiny app. And monetary assurances and robust, reliable, never going to be cut off ever. Monetary settlement infrastructure is not even, it's not even like a focus. At least in my opinion, I think the most, without a doubt, there is no market as big as money. If you're going for the global reserve currency, if you're going for the most sound, secure monetary commodity, monetary good on the planet, there is nothing. There's zero market that comes anywhere near. You can have the biggest social media company in the universe, but it does not match the money. The money is the most important good in an economy because it is that with which we measure the value of all the other goods. It's the reason we can communicate value in the first place, which is how an economy comes to be. And I believe the crypto space only sees tech. Maybe that's not all of them, but I think that is generally what, if I had to say that, you know, if I had to use the Pareto distribution, I would say 80% of crypto is interested in the tech and startups, and 20% is kind of interested in the money. And if you look at Bitcoin, 80% is like, this is money. And 20% is like, well, there's also like, you know, we can build some really fun tech and stuff on top of it. But most of it is there to serve the money. It's about making economic firmware for the planet that is impossible to break no matter what you throw at it, and is never going to go down no matter how many damn wires you cut. And I love actually how Nick Bhatia put it in this piece when he was kind of hitting that concept, was that there was a line I saved it. 1 second. While writing Layered Money, I concluded that gold was the monetary precedent that Bitcoin was trying to chase down, and that neutrality was the only requirement. The mission of Bitcoin is to establish radical neutrality. And in doing so, it will become the most trusted, reliable monetary asset on the planet. And I agree. I agree with Nick Bhatia that Bitcoin stands alone. When you're looking at that, when you're looking at the goals, how these things are built, what their mission is, what they are trying to do, what they care about, what the priorities are, there is crypto, and then there is Bitcoin. and they are neither pointed in the same direction. They do not have the same goals. They do not even have the same interests. They are completely separate missions, completely separate assets. And like I always say, it is going to continue to be very interesting to watch all of this unfold, because, man, what a crazy time we live in. You know, I mentioned AMC and GameStop and talking about like being in the midst of a debt bubble, or really a currency collapse. That's kind of what I think this is like. So this is the fallout of an enormous amount of just cheap, frivolous capital being thrown at the markets, just numbers and accounts everywhere. And that is this created this insane environment where just less and less and less is needed to justify throwing money at something. You know, it just needs to be kind of interesting or kind of makes you chuckle. You know what I mean? Like, it's just everything is so cheap for the discretion about how to allocate capital, because there is no discretion about allocating capital when you've printed $6 trillion out of thin air and just thrown it at people. Like, literally, just written in a couple of weeks, like 2 weeks, wrote down 20,000 pages of who gets the money. Can you imagine the trillions of dollars being spent in the economy by hundreds of millions of people ever having the equivalent lack of caring about where that capital goes? Like, they're just throwing it at somebody who sounds like they should get a subsidy, or somebody who, you know, just came to their office and lobbied for 10 minutes and said, I want this thing. And, oh, I got to make sure my cousin gets some. And I got to make sure that all these big corporations get stuff. And I got to make sure all the people in this demographic and this demographic and this demographic, and just pull it all out of their ass. Literally thousands of pages worth just thrown into a big stack. Nobody fucking reads it. And then we all just vote on it. And $2 trillion is just poofed into existence. And it just gets just... it just helicopter money. Literally, they might as well just fly all of the airlines. Like, they should have a campaign where, yeah, I see airliners go over all the time. You know, they're all just always in the sky. They just go over and they just drop giant pallets of money. That's the level of thought and concern that they have. I don't know. Why wouldn't crypto happen in that environment? You know? I don't know. Again, I always leave myself open to being wrong. It just feels like we're doing the same thing that happened in 2017. And I don't remember any of those ICOs becoming anything. Even Nick Bhatia brings that up. Just you remember the ICOs of 2017? Where are they now? Like, why are they, were they a technology? Were they this great new thing that was just going to be amazing and it was going to change the world? Or what is it? What is it now? I don't know. It just feels like that's what's going to continue to happen. We're going to have these hype cycles, and who knows how long it takes for the pricing mechanism to run its course, for the dollar to basically die in the sense that we realize that the price is not the truth when you're measuring it in the dollar. And then that discretion, that caring changes when you're talking about the amount of Bitcoin it is. When you've got a reliable, incredibly high assurance, nation-grade, global, neutral money, I think the discretion and the caring, the level of concern about how that capital is allocated, when we find ourselves in the environment fully understanding the value of capital again, I think we will not see these GameStop stock explosions. We won't see the joke of AMC, which is just Reddit punishing the manipulative hedge funds working with capital that doesn't exist. I don't think we'll see, you know, $26 billion or the equivalent of in Bitcoin going to Shiba Inu coin just to say, ha ha ha, I'm the better dog than Dogecoin. So, anyway, we'll close that one out here. Huge thank you to Nick Bhatia. Always amazing writing. Getting back into it. I see now that now that he's shook off layered money a little bit. I know that was a hell of a project, and he killed it with that book. Honored to have been the voice of Layered Money. Definitely follow Nick Bhatia. Check out his Lightning Network reference rate articles from way back when. Layered Money, if you haven't. I have links to this article, to all the stuff, to his Twitter, everything in the show notes. Check it out. And of course, check out our amazing sponsors, the Bitcoin 2022 conference. Get your tickets 10% off. Code GuySwan. That'll be in the show notes. And get it with your Fold card for some extra sat stacking. 20% off the Fold premium if you don't have it. That discount code is also in the show notes. And then stack every day, every week, every month, whatever you want with swanbitcoin.com/guy for my referral. And of course, after you get all those sats stacked, keep them safe with a good, solid, easy-to-use hardware wallet, the Bitbox O2. Thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and check out bitcoinaudible.com for tons of other episodes and audio from all sorts of stuff. And I hope doing a lot of work on that front. So hopefully there's something coming in the next couple of months. Thank you guys. Thank you guys so much. I am Guy Swan. And until next time, everybody, take it easy. You have been listening to Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.